The Business on RT Radio 1 with Ulster Bank. For when you're keen to know what Brexit means for your business, visit ulsterbank.ie/Brexit.
But first, shutdown or lockdown, whatever we choose to call it this weekend, Gardaí will be out in force to make sure people are only travelling for essential reasons. The new government measures came shortly after the deaths were announced of three more people to COVID-19, one of them a nurse. Here's what Leo Varadkar had to say.
These are radical actions aimed at saving as many people's lives as possible in the days and weeks ahead. We're not prisoners of fate. We can influence what's going to happen to us next. There is no fate but what we make for ourselves. Our country is rising to this challenge, and I'm convinced we will prevail.
Well, only essential workers will be permitted to leave home, so will these further measures change the outlook that the ESRI examined earlier this week? A shrinking of the economy by at least 7% and unemployment soaring to 18% by the middle of the year. To look at the economic impact, we're joined by economist Colm McCarthy and Tony Foley, Assistant Professor in Economics from Dublin Business School. You're both very welcome to the programme. Tony, first to you, the economy is shutting down in many respects. Can it be revived when all of this is over? Is it like switching on and off a light switch?
To a certain extent, it's like switching on and off, but there's no guarantee the bounce will be as rapid as we would like. If you look back to the financial crisis we had in 2008, there are three kind of possibilities. There's the V-shaped response, collapse and immediate recovery. Then there's the U-shaped response, which is collapse and a very gradual but still recovery. And then unfortunately have what's almost described as the Greek case, which is the L, that you get the drop and you plod along on the base, as it were. So we are hoping that we will have a quick recovery. And a lot of the policies which are presented are aimed at that, because they're presented as stimulus policies, and the same with Trump as a stimulus policy. But they're not stimulus in the normal meaning. They're actually prevent and preserve. They're trying to prevent growing indebtedness, prevent collapse in living standards, prevent businesses going out of operation, and preserve the supply capacity of the economy. The normal stimulation policy is you're trying to put money into the economy to boost demand. But of course, we don't really want to boost demand now because we don't have the supply capacity. Everything is closed down.
And there may be an opportunity to provide that stimulus further down the road. Colin McCarthy,
there will be an absolute need to provide it on a global basis further down the road.
Colin McCarthy, do you think this idea of some sort of a V-shaped recovery or a reasonably rapid bounce back is credible?
Well, the Economic and Social Research Institute report, Richard, that you mentioned, is posited on the notion that the severe period of economic disruption will last about 12 weeks, and then there should be a steady recovery, and they're kind of hoping that things will be getting back to normal over the winter and early next year. And that could happen, who knows? Let's hope it does. But there is a distinct possibility, I think, that it could take a bit longer than that.
Why?
And that the numbers in the ESRI report are a little bit on the rosy side. Nobody really knows. One of the problems that I think people need to be conscious of is that the last time, after the financial crash, and this is a different kind of economic interruption, after the crash in 2012-2013, the Irish economy was pulled out of it by external demand, really, and by foreign direct investment. Domestic demand stayed weak. This time round, if we are successful, suppose our virtual lockdown has the desired effect, there won't be that bounce back in external demand unless everybody else is equally successful. And something that I'm a bit worried about is that the United States looks like they haven't handled the thing all that well. The U.S. economy could get a serious a dose. And if that happens, that has a big impact here. Ireland is more exposed to the success of the U.S. economy than any other country in Europe.
And we're going to talk about the U.S. now in a few moments. But Tony Foley, just when you look at the possibility of a reasonably rapid turnaround when this passes through and it goes by us. But if you look at individual sectors and you look, for example, at tourism, I mean, tourism is not going to bounce back in the latter part of the year. We'll have missed an entire summer of foreign traveller and foreign visitors. We had 10.6 million last year. If you look at the amount of national debt that's going to be accumulated, perhaps not just here, but in other countries as well, will people's spending power be what it was?
No, spending power won't be what it was, because even the government proposals and income support and subsidies won't replace 100% of what you've lost. So everyone will come out of the recession worse off than they went into it, except for some sectors. Obviously, supermarkets are booming, health products production is booming, there'll be increased employment in the healthcare sector and so on. But for the vast majority of the economy, we'll come out with less. And Colm is absolutely right that the big problem to our rapid recovery is what's happening in the global economy, that we may be ready to take off, as it were, but the rest of the world isn't, and then we're constrained to the domestic side. You're absolutely right on the tourism side, but remember, there's also a domestic part to the whole hospitality sector, that there's, whatever, 250,000 people employed in the hospitality sector, but the vast majority of them depend on the domestic economy, and obviously a large chunk depends on the foreign sector. We would not expect the foreign sector to pick up as quickly as the normal going back out to hotels, back out to restaurants from the domestic side. Can I just mention, the ESRI themselves say that their forecast, no, it's not a forecast, as it's just an assessment of 7% may be, to quote, too benign, and that it does assume that there will be an international revival in quarters three and quarter four. And of course, relaxing those two assumptions, we're probably going to be looking at something far greater than a 7% decline overall.
Well, if you look, Colin McCarthy, in that ESRI report, they did talk about, and it's just one scenario, a possible exchequer deficit of maybe 4% of GDP instead of a small surplus that we would have been looking at before this. But when you actually translate that into money, that's a turnaround of about 14 or 15 billion in the exchequer finances. And that's a relatively benign scenario.
Yeah, it is, and that's what worries me. One of the features of you know, the immense uncertainty that's out there is tail risk. You know, it's quite brave of the ESRI to put numbers on it, and fair play to them. But they're very conscious in their report that that's really all they're doing. They're just having a stab at it. The bond requirement could shoot up by more than that. And that's one of the things that worries me. Cliff Taylor has a good piece in the Irish Times today about it, and I've written about the same issue for the Sunday Independent tomorrow. An awful lot depends now on the European Central Bank and on their willingness to stabilise the sovereign bond market in Europe. Some of your listeners will remember that back in 2011, 2012, the European Central Bank kind of made a hames of things, and they allowed the Eurozone to fragment and huge spreads to emerge in the bond market. And there's been a bit of a faux pas the last few weeks in Frankfurt about this. They're trying to get back on top of the situation, and they've announced a bond buying program. But it's really necessary for the central European authorities, particularly the ECB, to move quickly to dispel any fears of Eurozone fragmentation. It would be a complete disaster if the pandemic were to be accompanied by a flipping financial crash.
Well, you mentioned there about the United States and the possibility or the implications for us as to whether or not it recovers and how quickly it might recover. So Tony and Colm, stay with us. But just on the question of America, Donald Trump seems to be taking a huge gamble in how he's approaching the crisis. He says that he doesn't want the cure for the coronavirus to be worse than the disease itself, meaning the economic impact could cost more lives than the virus itself. And he wants America to return to business by April 12th.
I said earlier today that I hope we can do this by Easter. I think that would be a great thing for our country, and we're all working very hard to make that a reality. We'll be meeting with a lot of people to see if it can be done. Easter is a very special day for many reasons. For me, for a lot of our friends, that's a very special day. And what a great timeline this would be. Easter is our timeline. What a great timeline that would be.
Suzanne Lynch, Washington correspondent with the Irish Times, perhaps you could shed some light on it for us. What is he talking about happening at Easter?
Well, what he's talking about there is that he aims, it's quite vague, but he's saying that the US economy, as he puts it, will reopen in the next couple of weeks. So what we saw earlier this week is yet another shift in approach by Donald Trump. He obviously started off in the last 2 months minimizing the threat of coronavirus. Then about 10 days ago, he talked about being a wartime president and had changed his language completely. But this week, we've seen a flip back again. He appears to have been speaking to a lot of people in the commercial world, and we're seeing this kind of tug of war between business advisors who are speaking to the president and his health policy experts. And at the moment, he's going with the business advisors. He is prepared at the moment to put the economy back on track over public health concerns.
Great a lockdown is it in? You're in Washington, yeah. Suzanne. Are you in lockdown, or what's
yes,
Washington like?
I mean, very much so. I think the thing to remember about the United States is it is a federalist system. So Donald Trump is limited in one sense what he can do, because in this country, the states have a lot of power. They have a lot of power in a lot of things, on education policy and everything like that. And also when it comes to shutting down bits of business. So we have seen a kind of a piecemeal approach across the United States. So some states have been very strict and have ordered a lot of shutdowns. Others have been much more tardy on this. So where I am in Washington, D.C., which is technically not a state, a district, it has been very much ahead of the curve. So for 2 weeks now, there's been a pretty wide shutdown of all schools, all shops, even, you know, things like shopping malls that maybe would have remained open in some parts of Europe. They were closed here in Washington. So there's been a real shutdown here. So,
and it varies from state to state and place to place. So, I mean, even if Donald Trump announces on a federal level that he wants to open up the economy and open up businesses more, can individual states and governors say, well, no, we're staying in lockdown, we're applying our own rules here?
Exactly, they can do that. So,
is it a stunt, you know, in a sense?
It is, in a way it is, because in one way you could argue that even though he doesn't technically have lots of power in this area, he could provide a leadership and direct or advise the entire country to go one way or the other. He has chosen not to do that. But second of all, I think you're right in that this could be quite a clever move by Donald Trump, because if Easter comes and the numbers are up, he can say, well, it's not me stopping the country. It's that governor in New York or that governor in Washington State. To his supporters, he can say, I wanted to reopen it, but I don't have the power. So this narrative he's talking about the economy and how that's essentially more important than what's happening in the public health sphere is resonating with a lot of people in this country.
His ratings are up, are they?
Yeah. There was a Gallup poll this week that showed a 5-point increase in his popularity and in how he's handling the crisis. Now, some of that may be a kind of a reaction to a crisis. This would tend to happen. It happened around, 9/11, Hurricane Katrina, that there's a kind of a national rallying around, and people of all political persuasions tend to kind of get behind their president. So it may reflect that. It is only one or two polls, we're not sure. But, there's a counter narrative here. Fox News has been tacking the president on this for the last few weeks. During the week, Donald Trump held a 2-hour virtual town hall, they called it, from the White House with Fox News, where he only heard questions from Fox News viewers and presenters. And they are with him on his policy. And I think that is going to resonate with a lot of his supporters. But we do have to remember that this is a president who has cast his entire re-election campaign on the economy. The US economy had been doing very well, the stock market had been up, and this was key to Donald Trump's narrative. So if that is now under pressure, as we know it is, that could spell trouble for his whole re-election campaign, and because, of course, we are in an election year here.
And given the nature of the crisis, it's very difficult for the likes of Joe Biden to get on air, to get airtime, to get oxygen in that sense.
Yeah, this is one of the trends in the last few weeks. America was right in the middle of a very interesting primary contest on the Democratic side, who is going to be the nominee. Now, as it happened, Joe Biden had just emerged as the front runner. He won a swing of states on Super Tuesday and then had emerged really as a leader. Now, Bernie Sanders is still in the race, but basically that race has now been put on pause. And Joe Biden is now holed up in his home in Delaware, kind of having virtual chats with the public, with supporters, with donors, which, of course, are very important. And now you're going to have a lot of rich people who will not want to be spending money coming up to the election. So I think Joe Biden's campaign team are worried about that. But for Biden, this could work in his favour. He was in the White House with Barack Obama. They handled Ebola crisis, for example. So he's got some experience on this, where someone like Bernie Sanders, for example, would not.
So that might stand to him.
It may stand to him.
Tony Foley, just when you hear that and you think about the possible approach that Donald Trump is now thinking of taking, what do you think about the longer term economic impact of that and what it might mean for us?
The longer term impact, we don't know, quite honestly, because we don't know how the supply side of economies are going to come out of this. You've got to remember that his stimulation package echoes much of what we're doing. It's attempting to support the supply side. It's providing credit and so on, supports for business, it's income support for people, higher unemployment payments, a cash grant, if you like, to citizens in the United States to help them over dropping living standards. But and the Senate and so on will be the first to accept that when the disease phase is over and the preserve and prevent stage is over, they will need another big stimulation package. And of course, that's what we will require in Europe as well.
Colin,
the hope is that the supply capacity will be sustained and will be capable of taking off. But there are three crucial issues in terms of the overall economy. One is, I do think the economic decline will be much higher than the ESRI scenario suggested. The public finances will be worse hit than their scenario of the 4 to 5% deficit. And the ECB is absolutely critical and central to the overall European recovery.
Just briefly, Colin McCarthy, I noted that the UK leaving the EU, not in the Eurozone. What if they need to borrow a lot of money, they're on their own. They can, of course, print money. One of the credit rating agencies, Fitch, downgraded their debt with a negative outlook that they might downgrade it further. Is that a source of concern into the future for us?
It isn't. The British have their own currency still, so they have a meaningful central bank in London. And they don't have to sell debt. They can create money. The central bank can go off and lend money directly to the government. And that's really what the ECB needs to do. It needs to ensure that none of the European governments have serious difficulties in the bond market. Can I just make a quick comment about the United States and Trump's target of Easter Sunday? The virus is not Christian. The virus will not be celebrating Easter. And to fix a date like that and imply that the lockdown measures and so on ought to be relaxed by then is really an extraordinary thing to do. And it makes me worry that there isn't really good centralised leadership in the United States, which is trouble for us.
Well, on that word of warning, we'll have to leave it there. Colin McCarthy, Tony Foley and Suzanne Lynch, thank you very much for joining us on the programme.